Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. We're glad you're with us. My guest this week, speaking to us by a phone from his office, is Mayor Todd Barton of Crawfordsville. We'd love to have your questions for him in our next half hour. You can call those in to area code 765-496-1999. Send an email to ask@wbaa.org or tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon. Good to talk to you. Happy New Year.
Good afternoon. It's great to be here.
And so let's get right back into a couple of things that we talked about at the end of last year that have had some developments since we last spoke to you on the show. We talked a couple of months ago about both your city and WBAA independently investigating possible fraud in the number of homestead tax deductions taken in your county and, in our case, taken across the state. So we've begun to interview people for our story, which is due out in the next month or so. But I wanted to check in and see how your investigation was going.
Well, we did slow down just a little bit because of the holidays and those things. We've ramped it up again, and just recently in this last week have brought on board some of our interns that we are going to have from Wabash College this spring. And I think we have a really solid plan for moving forward. We are creating a database that cross-references information. So we are looking at those properties with homesteads and then cross-referencing that with things such as electric utility information, voter registration information, and things like that. So we can very quickly begin to see if there are any red flags. And certainly there may be explanations for some of those things, but when they all start to add up, then it's something that needs to be investigated. And, I've been picking sample areas that I think exemplify normal parts of the city, if you will, and going through. And I'm finding, about 30% of those homestead exemptions are questionable. We're working through that.
Does that percentage surprise you?
No, it does not. It does not. Sadly, I hate to say that, but it does not surprise me. I've said all along that we have a significant problem here and that we need to address it.
And so I'm wondering if you've gotten any pushback from, say, utility companies or places like that where you're trying to seek out this corroborating information to determine if someone actually lives in the place that they file for the homestead deduction.
Well, we've not. Most of that is publicly available information. The utility information, we did go through the legal process to make sure we do that correctly, and that's something that was allowed. And we've gone through that process, so we know we are in good shape there. So we've not had any pushback on those ends.
How long do you expect it to take to create this database, and how many people do you think will be working on it simultaneously?
Well, I would say, I would hope that we would have it done within a month and a half or 2 months. And right now we're throwing two people on it on a significant amount of times and probably two more a little bit less time. So it's kind of fun to watch because obviously the younger minds think differently, so where I'm thinking through of going through manually and looking at each one of these, they're already finding ways to shorten that process and get accurate information. So I don't think it'll take us long. And we've already been, as properties come to our attention, we've been handing those over to the auditor to look at. The bottom line is it takes a little bit of work. I mean, it's not something that you can just fly through. You have to research properties. But I was looking at some this morning and find homestead exemptions in the name of people who've been deceased for nearly a decade. So, it's going to take some work and some digging, but I think we will come up with some results that warrant attention.
Yeah, my next question was going to be how you were working with the auditor's office. And I'm curious about the relationship there because this potentially has the ability to make auditors in counties across the state of Indiana look bad because, it is the auditor's job to make sure that these things aren't happening, but we know that they are in every single county in Indiana.
Well, they are, and, we keep that professional and above board, and as we see those issues, we're going to forward those to the auditor, and how they choose to proceed from there, we will kind of sit back and watch. So, I did tell, we were meeting with the college students this week, and I did tell them, if you can find a way to create this database, this is a pretty marketable thing because we are not unique in this situation. This problem exists all over the state of Indiana.
Right, but you would potentially have to recreate it with information from all over the place if you were to do it on a county-by-county basis. This is one of the things that we have found. And fortunately, we were able to get a big list of all of the homestead deductions in the state, all 1.8 million of them, from the Department of Local Government Finance. But then we quickly found out, and I'm curious if you found the same thing, that that's really only the tip of the iceberg. There is a lot of work that has to go in to determine which ones of these are questionable and which ones seem to be above board.
There is, and you have to really consult multiple sources, I think, to start to get a picture of that. And then ultimately, the auditor has the ability to request that that person verify this and to verify under oath that what the information they're giving is correct. And I think you start to really weed them out when you get to that point. So it is a lot of work, and you do have to cross-reference multiple sources to get to the information.
Let me ask a little bit about that, because your county auditor, Jennifer Endell, wrote me an email a couple of months ago when we first started this process, and we contacted all of the auditors in the state. And she sent back a note saying, look, we are under-resourced, we are underfunded. And so I'm wondering if and when your research is complete and you want to go after the scofflaws on this list, does the county, do you think, have the money and the manpower it would need to catch up with all of these people?
Well, that's a question that the county will have to address. I think we first have to really expose the magnitude of the issue, and then that'll be between the auditor and county officials, how they really seek to approach that. But we, through the rental ordinance and some of those things, we are going to take every step we can on our end to right the ship here and kind of clean this up.
Is this the kind of thing where either the city or the county, do you think, would employ, say, a collections agency to go after people who, let's not forget, if you are found in violation of this, you're going to owe back taxes, fines, et cetera?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. That's still a little premature. And again, our goal here is not, to go after, people who are doing things right. Our goal is to create a level playing field and to stop some of this rampant abuse, some of which occurs at the hands of local residents and much of which occurs at the hands of out-of-town residents who are taking advantage of our community. So I don't know that I can answer that question, but we will certainly look at every option.
Well, I mean, we're talking about potentially a fair amount of money that your city's general fund could recoup if you find, for instance, that you've got, say, the example you gave. Someone has had a delinquent property tax record for a decade or so. I mean, state statute very clearly spells out that you're entitled to recoup the amount of money in taxes that you would otherwise have gotten from that person.
Yes, and we've seen that on a very small number of cases. I can think of an example that we turned over, probably about 2 years ago now, and I'm looking at the record, and they did go back and assess, those back taxes and fines and things like that. So it would add up rather quickly.
Are you reaching out to people whose names you find in violation, or especially those people whose names you find over and over and over, and asking for explanations as to what's going on?
We have not yet. I think when we have a better picture and a cleaner set of data that we can really look at, we might do that in some of those extreme cases to really see where we're at. But we'll certainly rely on the advice of our legal counsel before we move in any direction like that. And ultimately, it's not, up to the city to get this corrected. It's ultimately a decision and a process that the auditor has to go through. So we'll predominantly hand that data over to the auditor, but we'll certainly look at our options.
So let me ask again about the money, because, again, your auditor has said we're not rolling in cash to be able to do a lot of these things, and we kind of do the best we can. Your city, on the other hand, is in a slightly better financial state. You've said on this program you've got a rainy day fund that's around the amount of money it would take to run the city for a year, maybe a little bit more than that. Are you in any sort of a position to give a grant or a loan or something like that to the county such that they would have enough money to go after these people, which, of course, would bring more money potentially back to you in the end?
Well, we would look at our options as far as exploring this on the city side. I mean, I don't think I could justify a countywide, approach to addressing this issue, but certainly properties within the city, we would look at our options as far as paying someone to do some of this work. Anything's on the table at this point, but I think also the county has to step back, and it's I guess pretty easy to say we don't have the money or resources to do this, to which I would respond, that's precisely the point. When you're talking about this kind of money that's left out there that's not being paid, it might well justify itself and pay for itself to hire somebody to get this cleaned up. You're going to come out far ahead if you fix this.
State law at the moment says the burden is on the homeowner to tell the county if they no longer qualify for a homestead deduction. I'm wondering if you think that law needs a rewrite, in part to help protect counties and auditor's offices like yours that just don't have big budgets.
Well, that could be part of the answer. If you have to recertify this, you will, if you will, every year. Let's say you moved and it, you know, it just stays there. But I don't think that's the overarching problem. I don't think that that's the bulk of what we're seeing. That is a small percentage of the problem in my view. The larger problem is people who are just knowingly and willingly falsely submitting these. And there are even cases where I think they're getting bad information and they think they're entitled to this because they have one and their spouse has one and we did live there. I mean, you hear all kinds of excuses. So it runs the gamut. And I think cases in which somebody moved and it stayed on are probably a small percentage.
So it sounds like you might like to see kind of a separation in state law from those people who just move and forget to take it off the books versus those people who obviously have a residence in one place and are buying up properties in other places that they are obviously not going to live in and then applying for the homestead deductions there.
Yes, very much so.
So do you think that those people should have stiffer penalties levied on them if the state or the county can judge that sort of intent?
Well, I think that should be an option. I mean, ultimately, these decisions come down to the court or whichever body's looking at this. But that should certainly be an option. We need to take this seriously, and we need to put things out there that make people take it seriously. So anything like that should and could be considered.
It's possible that your investigation and ours, indeed, will both be done during the legislative session, or you'll have at least preliminary data. Is this something that you might want to take to lawmakers, especially as they're drawing up a budget, and say, look, hey, we've identified this as a big problem that's costing the state and all of its 92 counties significant dollar amounts. Can you do something about this?
It is data that we will take to the legislators and really get their input. You know, I don't know if we will be in time to see much happen this session, but we certainly will be giving them some food for thought as they move forward.
One last question on this general topic, because I noticed that there's also a bill in the state legislature that talks about how many days someone can rent out their house on a website like Airbnb. And it occurred to me that that might be a small part of this, too. So I went this morning and I checked Airbnb for houses in Crawfordsville that are rentable. And there are only a few of them on any given day. But I thought, you know, given your push for better landlord behavior overall, which we've talked about on this show, would you like your city to be able to make its own rules, which was the original intent of the bill, was to kind of stop local municipalities from being able to make their own rules? And now they want to say, and the state will say, we'll limit it to 180 days a year or something that the house can be rented out. Do you think you need more control over local businesses like that, since it is, in this case, someone turning their home into a business?
Well, I don't know. That's a fine line. You know, I do understand the need for consistency around the state, and having one set of rules in one community and a different set in another can become problematic. So I don't have a big problem with those temporary kinds of situations. That's not what's causing our issues. Our issues are caused by straight-up rentals that are rented, you know, 12 months out of the year that aren't following really any of the rules. So, I would be open to that, but I don't think that's the big issue.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. Please call in with your questions for him. The phone number 765-496-1999, 765-496-1999. Send an email to ask@WBAA.org or tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, our reporter Charlotte Tuggle came to your city a couple weeks ago and talked with you about how you have sort of instigated this split with an economic development organization that had been tasked with marketing Crawfordsville. Can you remind us quickly, for anybody who didn't get a chance to hear that story, why you thought your relationship with Indiana West Advantage was no longer working for the city?
Well, anytime we're expending tax money in this kind of thing, I think we have an obligation, really, to constantly monitor the success. And Indiana West Advantage and its predecessor agency, Montgomery County Economic Development, have been tasked with promoting economic development in our community for many years. In the 5 years plus that I've been involved, they've worked very hard to continue refining that organization, pushing for change to really adapt us to what we're seeing in today's economic development world. And keep in mind, it changes very rapidly. So we were constantly moving and trying to make that happen. I just reached a point, especially over the last year, that I've come to the conclusion that I can't shape it in that direction, and it was becoming very unresponsive. And I have to weigh out the cost versus the benefit. And I don't just mean the cost of what we pay for this service. I mean the cost of missed opportunities. And those were becoming more and more apparent to me. So over the last year, I've worked economic development pretty hard on my own, and really viewed it as, I hire, on the city's behalf, I hire Indiana West Advantage to go out and be our salesperson, if you will. And I didn't feel that the sales part of it was being accomplished. I felt they were busy. They were doing a lot of things, but it wasn't really the sales piece that we needed. And sales is hard work. Anyone who works in sales will tell you it's very hard, grinding work. And I know from my experience, I probably meet with about 10 developers to get one good lead, and that's what it takes. And I wasn't getting that from that situation. So made a decision that it was time to change course and try to put this on the right direction and create something that I feel will be small and focused and nimble and adapt to today's climate.
When you say they weren't being responsive, what do you mean?
Well, they were not being responsive, in my mind, and you can debate this, but in my mind, to the changing world around them. In 2012, we had said we wanted a smaller, more nimble organization that could adapt to change quickly because economic development changes. The organization had become much larger, quite the opposite, it become much larger since 2012. So we were constantly, at least from my perspective and the city's behalf, we were constantly saying, hey, we need to think about A, B, and C, and we just were not getting responses to those. It was kind of being pulled around in other directions.
So I wonder, is it a case of responsive to you? I mean, could you not get your accomplishments noticed? Could you not get your pushes to attract certain types of people to be the things that they were doing? I mean, if you sent them a message, would they do what you asked of them?
Well, I don't know. There's a lot of gray area there. But for really, the bottom line for me is that we've had some really good developments in the last few years, and we've had some significant accomplishments. We have, job growth in existing employers, a lot of good announcements. And when I sit down and really analyze it, their role in each one of those was pretty small at best, and many times they had no role at all. We were doing that on our own, and we were sometimes hiring outside consultants to help us put together the best package and the best deal. So you kind of have to weigh that out. And the other piece for me is that when I have a good lead, I expect to be able to hand that to this sales team, if you will, and say, here it is, go work on this, leave no stone unturned, tell me what you need, let's see what we can make happen. And as I handed those leads off, I was not getting any kind of feedback or reaction like that.
And so it sounds like what you're saying is, A, you perhaps didn't get as much bang for your buck as you wanted, and B, their conversion rate on those leads was not up to snuff.
Well, I think zero is not up to snuff. Yeah, I mean, we were in the zero range, so not working. And I'll be the first to say there are many very good, talented people involved in that process. Many of the volunteers are top-notch, and we have staff members who have impressive backgrounds and impressive histories. But I think the system itself was broken. It's an antiquated system, and it's really a system of a closed system that did not respond to public input. You had to be invited to be on the board. So it becomes kind of a club type of environment that we're trying to do good things. I don't mean it in a negative way, but it's very closed and not responsive to what the public is feeding back. And at the end of the day, as elected officials, and in my situation, I'm the one held responsible by the public, and that's appropriate. I should be. So I need to know that this system is responding to the feedback that I am getting, and it was insulated. That was not happening.
When I first heard about this announcement, I thought about the city of Columbus and a story I covered a few years ago. They had this kind of quasi-governmental body that did economic development for downtown Columbus, which was not subject to open meetings laws, which was not subject to public records requests. And eventually, even though that entity had done some good stuff for revitalizing downtown Columbus, they had a change in mayoral administrations. The incoming mayor disbanded that thing because the thought was, well, this is being done kind of under cloak and dagger. Did that enter your mind here at all?
It was part of the equation. It was absolutely part. This group was a nonprofit. They did not have to comply with open door laws. Repeatedly over the last several years had been asked by county government to open their books and expose their finances, had not done that. You kind of at some point have to ask yourself, how can I continue to put tax money into something that's considered secret and kind of murky and cloudy and not really opening up to the public what they are doing financially? So it was a factor in my decision, and the proposed replacement that I have laid on the table would be subject to open door laws and would be the books would be open and everything would be transparent.
Let me ask you the other side of that, because one of the things I hear from mayors all the time when I'm asking them about economic development and the discussions they're having with potential developers is they say, look, these companies want us to keep things very secret. They don't want to announce it until all the ink is dry on all of
right.
the contracts. Does this, have
two
the potential?
Totally, no, two totally different issues, and people get those. Oh, they tend to overlap those and pull those together, and those are entirely separate issues. When we talk about the structure and the overall theory and the approach to economic development in your community, that should be open and subject to input. Now, when you're talking about specific dealings with a specific company or developer, we have full ability to go into, according to state law, go into executive session, discuss that privately, keep them shielded until we're ready to expose it. So, I don't buy that. I think it's confusing the two issues, and they're totally separate.
So even though this is going to be subject to open records laws, it'll still operate in a way where you're still not going to be able to tell me who you're trying to recruit.
Absolutely. I mean, and I think everybody understands that. When we're dealing with, a company, they don't want their competitors to know what they're doing. So, people will understand that we have X amount of money to work with, and this is how we divide our resources and our time and so on. And then they will see that, hey, they went into executive session, they're talking to somebody, and sometimes those potential deals work out, and sometimes they don't. So, the end result, at the end of the day, we're judged by results, and there has to be some results. And I think when we start seeing some results, we're not going to win every time, but when we start seeing some wins, people will see that this will work.
Not too long after we started this program in the summer of 2014, you told me about your excitement over getting all of the economic development entities in your county into one place, literally on the same floor of the same building. Does this change that?
Oh, absolutely not. This I think, enhances that and really takes that to the next level. Our plans with Stellar, with Fusion 54, to pull all of those entities together are on track. And I think this takes to that a high level of performance and accountability. I was deeply concerned about injecting, and these are my words, but mediocre performance into that equation. I think we need to walk into that with the best possible performance that we can get. So economic development will still be a key piece of that. We're not walking away from economic development. We're simply changing how we approach it and how we do it.
Lastly, how quickly do you think you can assemble your proposed replacement?
Well, we're having discussions right now with the county commissioners, and I think you'll see some action, definitely within the next month, maybe their next meeting or the following meeting. And then we'll start to work through that process. And I'm not terribly concerned about that at this point, because we're working very hard on our end to promote and do the things we need to do. So, I felt like over time we've often settled and tried to hurry, and I'm not going to do that. I'm going to make sure we take our time, we do this correctly, and in the end, we get the person we need to properly promote this community.
We're talking with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton today on WBAA's Ask the Mayor. Remember, you can email a question for any of our four mayors at any time to ask@WBAA.org. You and I talked a couple of times last year about your negotiations with Walmart about who would pay for paving an access road near their Crawfordsville store. I understand that process is potentially nearing its end?
It is. We've made significant progress there. Again, the holidays kind of slowed us down. It's interesting how the rest of the world shuts down for several weeks there. So that cost us some time, but we have a verbal agreement right now, and we are sending back and forth versions of a written agreement to reflect that and capture that, and we're pretty close on that. Just a few little words here and there that we need to work through. So I think you will see that in black and white resolved probably within the next 30 days, maybe as much as 60 days, but probably 30 days.
Best guess right now, how's the money working out? Who's paying for what?
Well, I can't disclose the terms yet until we have those nailed down, because I would hate to say something and then there's a change. So I'm not thrilled with where we are, but I'm comfortable with where we are. I will say that the amount that we will have to pay is significantly less than the appraised value.
So, but the city is going to be on the hook for some of it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And you know, I think you also have to weigh in the benefits. That's not an easy decision to make, and you have to weigh in the benefits of traffic flow and safety and the potential for future development.
And in just our last couple of minutes, one more thing you and I talked about a few times in 2016, your city's golf course trying to get back on its feet. And I see where you have done now what Frankfurt did about a year ago, which is turn management of the course over to a private entity.
You know, my conclusion there, I had two conclusions after years of working through the golf course situation. The number one conclusion was that we needed a golf course. It was very important to a lot of people. It's an important offering in our community. And my second conclusion was that the city was not equipped or prepared to run a golf course. So I had to balance those two things, and I think this does that. We retain ownership. We have the asset. It's very affordable. But on the other hand, we are bringing in professionals who run 150 courses and know what they're doing.
So how did you finally come to the conclusion that the city, which had run the course for a while, was not prepared to do it? I mean, it seems part of the problem was you had the employee who was accused of embezzling money from the course, and that certainly didn't help. How did you determine that the city was not the right entity, though?
Well, the results were speaking for themselves. It seemed like, you know, no matter what we tried and how we tried to adjust it, we just were not getting there. In reality, we were not. That's not our business. You know, we're not in that business. We don't understand the dynamics involved, and we were trying to make the best decision we could. But I think we were missing the mark many times, and it just came down to the bottom line at the end of the year. Each year, we had this deficit, and we were struggling, and we just could not seem to turn it around. You would think you're removing one thing, you know, like theft, and things will be better, and things didn't get better. And so it just continued to snowball. And, you know, when I looked at the structure, we just were not able to effectively run the course.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, thanks as always for your time. We're out of time for this month's show, but we'll look forward to talking to you again at the end of February.
Thank you very much.
And remember, you can tune in to Ask the Mayor next week for our conversation with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. Send questions in advance to ask@WBAA.org or tweet them at WBAA News on Twitter. And all these shows are archived at our website, WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.